Skull and Everett present This Week in Horror.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Everett.
And I'm Sickle. And we're Sickle and Everett, and we are the Unhallowed Reviewers. We are jumping into This Week in Horror with a ton of topics, I guess.
Random news time. Ba-da-ba-da-ba-da. Sweet out of squeak. Oh, we thought we were going to, like, you know, do harmonics.
I was really hoping that we could just do that for 15 minutes, and then we wouldn't have to.
But then we wouldn't have to talk about time to talk about these wonderful news topics.
Oh, they're so wonderful. So, I guess we should just start with the news topics, and then we can go into our other little subject for the evening. First one is that I didn't realize that this was as far along as it is, but Morbius has started filming. Morbius, for those who are not in the know, is a Spider-Man villain who, like Venom, who is nothing like Venom, but like Venom the movie, is getting his own movie that is separate from Spider-Man himself. And
is it Sony?
It is a Sony, yes. It's a Sony film. It is going to be starring Jared Leto as Morbius, which I think is a pretty lazy fit, which I mean that in I actually mean that in a great way, because they were just like, who's the palest American that we can throw into this role with creepy eyes? Jared Leto, perfect.
I believe that's called typecasting, and typecasting Jared Leto as a super villain vampire. So that's the thing I don't get about Morbius, is villain is like an anti-hero in most cases, and if you took it the whole look at, well, I'm sorry, he's a potential to be an anti-hero if you read the right arc, or at least a symbiote does. What does Morbius an anti-hero? I know nothing about Morbius enough to know Morbius, why he deserves his own movie.
Yes, I mean I'm gonna go back and forth on whether or not he deserves his own movie, but he is an anti-hero. His whole shtick is that he is not a vampire in the traditional sense. Instead of, like, being born that way or being bitten by a vampire and becoming one, he was, like, performing experiments on himself to, like, try to cure a blood disease, and it turned him into a vampire.
But it's like a siphon energy vampire, right? Not like a drink-your-blood vampire.
I think that really depends on the
doesn't he have things in his hands?
Yeah, I think that that was a I think that that really depends on the interpretation of him. I could be wrong, but I think there are different iterations of him. I think I could be way off base with this. I'm making this up off the top of my head, literally. But I think it's possible that what me and you are both referring to in that case was from the cartoon.
Yes.
And I think it may have been done that way so that they could put him in the show, so he's not biting people's necks all the time.
Okay, well, I thought he was a Blade villain at one point, too.
What's that?
I thought he was, like, in Blade as well. Like,
I think he has some because they share the same company, studio, so, I mean, that's definitely a possibility. They've had storylines that have crossed paths. But I could be wrong, I mean, about the siphoning energy thing, but I do know that he... that the whole point of his thing is that he craves blood, like he does crave the vampiric, you know, urge or whatever, but he chooses to use it only on people, like he chooses to feed on only people that he thinks deserve it.
He's like the Dexter of vampires.
Exactly! That is a great way to put it. So, yeah, that's spot on. He's the Dexter of vampires. He's like, well, if I have the urge to do this, then I might as well just do it to bad people. So that's what Morbius is. Jared Leto's a good fit. It's probably going to be... I would assume it's probably going to be about as good as Venom was, where it was entertaining, but it's not much else than that.
I just don't know, like, why I should care about Morbius movie.
It's like, really... That's a really Morbius? Good point. I know. I agree with you. It's probably because he's one of the easiest ones to separate from Spider-Man, and why not? Given the success of Venom, they're like, let's just do another kind of darkish, sci-fi-ish, you know, little mini sort of superhero.
Why not just do Moon Knight?
Because they will never give us what we want. That's why.
But who will?
Yeah, now great. Now I want to kill myself again. I mean, like, I'm already undead. I don't even know if that's possible.
It's okay. You just have to think about not doing that.
No.
But you know who will give us stuff? Amazon, because they're going to give us a show called Good Omens. And Good Omens, as I just witnessed, seems pretty interesting. I'm kind of excited for it.
I think it looks really freaking funny. Yeah. Good Omens is based on a Neil Gaiman graphic novel that's about... check my facts, because I could be wrong again. But I believe what it is about is like an angel and a demon that are living on Earth, and the apocalypse is coming, and the angel and demon are like, actually, we're really enjoying Earth. We don't really want the apocalypse to happen. So they try to stop it. And I think it's more of like this vain, selfish, like, laziness than anything else. It's not like they have no purpose beyond their own selfish ambition. But they decide to team up to try to stop the Antichrist so that they can, you know, save the Earth, not for Earth's sake, but for their own sake, just because they feel like chilling. I believe that's the plot. If it's not that, it's something pretty similar to that. It stars Michael Sheen and David Tennant and John Hamm. It's got all sorts of great actors in it.
Yeah.
I think it looks really funny. It reminds me a lot of Preacher, but not near as irreverent. Like, it's not like as over the top as Preacher is.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't appear to be, but it does look like it's going to have that kind of humor in it, which I really enjoy.
Yeah, I think it's a lot of fun. Preacher as well. And I mean, Good Omens definitely doesn't look as like it's going to be as, I guess, dark isn't the right word, but rated R, I guess, I'm air quoting here, as Preacher would have been, or is, or whatever. Like, Preacher's definitely more intense, I guess, just because of the stuff that happens in it, and the intensity with which they want you to feel the things that are happening. But this show seems like it's kind of like, I think you use the word irreverent,
which yes.
is a good way to describe what the show is trying to accomplish.
Yeah, it just doesn't, like, instead of, like, in Preacher where God goes missing, which is just theological, like, genocide, like, that was just like, something that's really hard to tolerate for anybody who has any kind of monotheistic perspective on the world. If you hold that with such intensity... you'd be incredibly offended by Preacher. And I think that you could watch Good Omens and not be offended, if that helps anybody get, like, an idea. It's like, I think it's just, I don't know, Preacher is difficult for some people to get through.
I never thought about that, but I guess I can understand why that would happen.
Yeah, I think that, I mean, if you haven't watched Preacher, it's an amazingly written show, it's really well done, but it does... It has no boundaries. It has no limits. Philosophically and theologically, it just throws everything out the window and just treats everything like, hey, this is just a story. Like, here's a story that we're telling. We're using these bases from primarily Christianity, and we're going. And if you can't appreciate that this is a story and just enjoy it for what it is, you're gonna have a bad time.
I believe... proponents of the rapture on here would say, if you can't take the heat, get your ass out the kitchen.
That's great. That's good.
But there's a pretty powerful, like, kid, I guess, now, because the Antichrist is like a kid who's like a teenager, right?
Yeah, it looks like they're kind of going in, you know, lack of a better word, omen direction.
Right.
With the kid. It looks like he's going to have a little bit more dark humor than the omen did, but it does feel like he's kind of like that. He's, like, slowly... It looks like he's gradually becoming self-aware that he's the Antichrist. And yeah. He's like, well, this is my thing now. And he's just killing people along the way.
Better own it. You know, another movie where a kid kills someone that we got to see a new trailer for recently was called Brightburn.
Yes. And I think we've talked about it before, mm-hmm. at least mentioned it in passing. But it is something that we are both looking forward to. It's essentially the concept. It's from James Gunn.
Which is awesome.
Of course, is... Guardians of the Galaxy guy.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know about Ifrit, but on this podcast, we don't hold people... or hold against things that happened in the past for people that have apologized for it, and it's happened forever ago, and they've been nothing but respectful and to people.
Hey, James don't put Gunn your agendas in our show.
Well, he's cool in my eyes.
Yeah, I like him too. I think you got
it's a specifically... And I don't know a lot of... I don't know a lot of details across the board, but James Gunn in particular seems like he's, you know, quote-unquote done his time, and Disney's a bunch of pretentious a-holes.
Yeah.
And anyways, Brightburn, it looks really awesome. It looks like it's basically what would happen if Superman landed and he was, like, a sociopath. And, like, yeah, had no ability to connect with people, and, like, his parents are still trying to raise him right, and he's like, no, I'm just gonna kill everybody. And
it's, I don't like being bullied, and I can use lasers for my eyes, so I'm gonna kill people.
Yeah. And why wouldn't you guys, why wouldn't anybody want to watch Superman just mass kill people that, wait, maybe you don't want to watch that.
I don't
think it looks
necessarily just want to watch that. I'll take the bait of your comment. after the second trailer, I'm kind of worried that it isn't anything more than just a Superman kills a bunch of people movie. And, like, I get bored by Superman far too easy to enjoy a movie that's just Superman murdering people. Because, like, I mean, Superman murders people all the time, accidentally. Just because he's taking credit for it now doesn't make it better. But Sickle and I were talking about potential, like, other kind of endings to that movie that could be really cool. Like, what if he is actually, like, infected with another alien that's causing him to go crazy? Or I think, Sickle, the one you said was, what if he was, like a genetic
weapon.
Yeah.
Like, it was, like, a genetic weapon that, like, they knew that, you know, and sentient beings won't just throw this thing out. And so they'll raise it for us, and then it kills everything, and then we arrive after everything has been destroyed.
That would be really cool, because then, like, if the Brightburn kind of Superman character might have to decide between, like, yeah, I don't really like people, but I also don't like being subjugated or a tool, and so I'm just going to kill everything, and then it becomes this kind of, like, really interesting kind of story to me.
And I think we can feel comfortable saying that because we're both, I think that we're both confident that won't be the case. Like, that's just probably not going to be it, and wishful thinking.
Yeah, unfortunately for me. But I just have trouble there's, like, a bunch of, I try not to watch movies too critically, but I think I would get bored by a movie that was just Superman murdering people. Because, like, it's not new. It's not new to me.
It's true. I think that we have similar feelings on the Superman dynamic. The only thing, in my opinion, that's interesting about Superman is that he's the reverse in his alter ego situation. Like, everybody else puts the mask on, and he's the only one that takes the mask off.
Oh, that's weird. I thought you were talking about, like, Yellow Kryptonite, but that's an interesting point you're making, too, about, like, how he's, like, Clark Kent's the secret identity.
Yes, and that's the part that's most interesting about Superman, but once you've gone through about two arcs of that, Superman has reached his max of what makes him interesting, and you just, like, there's only so much fun that can be had of a couple of mind games from Brainiac and Lex Luthor, and then everything else is Superman stronger than this? Yep, he is. Like, that's it. That's 90% of Superman storylines between 1930 or whenever he came out and 2000. And they've tried to mix him up a lot more recently with graphic novels like Red Sun, which was interesting.
Yeah, I like
and,
Red Sun.
And, you know, some other lines that are like that where it's more about what-if plots than where they can just retcon whatever they want.
Yeah.
Than, like, actually moving on the story of Superman. And there are a lot of diehard fans out there that can have perfectly reasonable, you know, explanations for why they love him and defenses, and I support them fully. But I he's just not my cup of tea.
Ditto. So, on the heel of Brightburn is another movie that I got confused when Sickle told me about called Burning Bright, which has nothing to do with Brightburn. So we're going to do a bad segue.
Yes, Burning Bright is actually an older film that didn't recently come out or anything, but it's sharing a very, copyright infringement level of similarity with this film that's coming out pretty soon. Burning Bright was a horror thriller film, suspense movie, about a girl who gets stuck in a house with her autistic brother during a hurricane, and a tiger is in the house.
Did someone put it there, or, like, what happened?
The, Sure, hey, the movie's been out for a while, so I'm just gonna spoil it. So the worst part of this movie is the plot makes no sense. So what happens is their stepdad, I think it's their stepdad, like their mom dies and has an inheritance and the stepdad wants it all for himself. But what's dumb, this is the dumb part, he buys this tiger for like a zoo or something that he's working on, and then comes up with the bright idea of releasing the tiger in the house during the hurricane to kill the two kids, but then expects somehow to not be held responsible for the tiger killing the kids.
Is this in the U.S.? Like,
yeah. Yeah, it's just like, what, you released the tiger into the house. Like, you're responsible for the tiger and the well-being of the children. Like, how are you going to explain
maybe
away?
Maybe he just thought it was like, oh, I wasn't there, and there's a tiger in the house, and it wasn't loose, but the hurricane let it loose. There, I figured it out.
It's dumb.
Rock
it's
hard
really
case.
Dumb. Because I'm pretty sure, if I recall correctly, something dumb, even dumber, happens at the end of the movie. Because that's when you find out that the stepdad releases it, I think. Is that not till the end? Maybe you'd know beforehand. But either way, he, like, walks in, and I think he has a gun. And it's like, dude, if you were gonna shoot him, what was the point of the tiger? This is the dumbest thing ever. I don't know.
Okay, so does the new movie that's kind of copyright infringing on this, Crawl, seem better?
I like the animal better. It's gonna be alligators, so it makes more sense.
Like more than
it's
one?
It's about... I think so. Cool. It said creatures, like predators, I think it was plural. But, like, the point of that movie is it's a girl stuck in a hurricane, stuck in a house in a hurricane, and I think she's trying to save her dad, who's in the house, and alligators start to, like, break into the house. I'm sure there's, like, flooding and things like that that lead to the alligators getting into the house. Obviously the plot's more realistic, which adds to the flavor for me. I think when you can make it realistic, it makes it more gritty, it makes it more relatable. So I am a little bit more interested in this movie than I was Burning Bright. Now, having bashed Burning Bright thoroughly already, it's actually a pretty fun movie. I enjoyed it a lot because most of it is like it's this cat and mouse game, for lack of a better word. Between this autistic kid and this girl trying to evade this tiger. And, like, one of the cool things about that movie was that it was 99, if not 100%, live action of a tiger. Oh, so, like, cool. They actually had a tiger that they were working with throughout the entire movie. And it does it's one of the best jobs I've ever seen at using live action animals to, like, build up the suspense and, like, you know, interact with the actors. It's one of the best movies I've seen that's done that. So it has a really good middle that I really enjoyed and I thought was really well done. It's just that the plot in general was mostly trash. So Crawl doesn't need a plot. You don't need this stupid stepdad thing. Like, just let it be a situation that is unlikely to ever happen but could happen, and let's see what happens. Because, like, let's roll with it, because it could be really fun to just watch this girl try to keep her dad alive while they're getting attacked by alligators.
Like, but why is that fun?
What's that?
Like, I don't know, like, I've been of reading about the movie as you were talking about it, and I just am like, okay, I can probably pass on that one, like...
Oh, it could be the dumbest, like, just... most bland, just nothing movie ever. It could easily be that.
But it's like, the problem is, it's like a 2-hour long bottle episode. So, like, you don't get to see any, like, well, this could be wrong. My thought would be that since there's only, like, 3 characters in the entire movie and one of them's an alligator, you're probably not going to see many cool, like, kill scenes. You can't see, like, too much in terms of, like, I mean, unless it's, like, a giant mansion with secret cobbles in the places everywhere, you're not going to see too much, like, of a different setting, right? And you're just watching a girl somehow not escape from alligators in a hurricane. Like, wouldn't you just stay in the room, like, on the top floor of your house and hope you don't die?
There's this movie called Bait that is about a tsunami in Australia, and this group of people are stuck in a flooded supermarket with great white sharks that break through into the shopping mall. And let me tell you, that movie was highly entertaining garbage, and I really enjoyed it.
For me, that sounds amazing because it's such an unlikely scenario that you're like, this is like Tremors kind of level of silly. Like, you're like, what the fuck is happening here? Pardon my French. But like, you know, and these two movies just seem like natural. It's like, oh, it's a tiger, and the tiger could kind of be in the house if it was like the right spot, and like alligators, and like I just want, why don't I just watch like Lake Placid or Venom? Not Venom. Was that movie the other alligator movie in Africa?
Rogue,
yeah, Rogue, that's what I'm thinking of.
Was amazing.
Yeah, I know, that's what I mean. It's like, why not watch those alligator movies instead of like coming up with a one that's like seems like a mediocre plot, I guess.
First off, Ifrit, the Rogue is a crocodile. It's completely different species.
See it a while, alligator. After a while, alligator.
You're ruining everything.
Yeah.
You're ruining everything. Yeah. That's the... No, I mean, it's a valid point, but like, I like creature features, so if they found a way to make it interesting, then I'm willing to give it a shot. I would agree with people that Alex Aja, or Aja, I don't know how to pronounce his last name, who did Crawl, hasn't made a super great movie in a long time. I don't know. I'm willing to give it a shot.
I guess I'm like thinking of like creature features as like kind of mildly supernatural like that's what I like in creature features. Like I didn't really like what's that movie with Liam Neeson where he gets chased by wolves a lot?
The Grey.
Yeah. Like I read some books when I was a kid called the Hatchet books, and like that's about all I needed of like survival. And after the Hatchet I was like, cool, this is a genre I don't need anymore. But, like, I'm being critical because I just feel like there's so many other better crocodile movies, or crocodile/alligator/reptilian horror films. Is that better, Sickle?
Yeah, that's fair. I just can't get it. I just can't get enough of them. So,
I don't consider it a creature feature, though. That's all I'm saying. Like, it's just like a survival horror movie with an animal.
Yes, I have a unique perspective on the way that I define those subgenres. Mm-hmm. So I call anything that's a creature feature for me, this is not the correct
definition. We should have an episode about this, actually.
This is just the way I define it. But creature features are quote-unquote monster movie that involves real-life creatures. So anything that could exist out there right now, even if it's slightly unrealistic to the size, is a creature feature. So Anaconda is a creature feature. Rogue is a creature feature. Anything like that.
What
and
about,
then anything
that
is not that,
the, like,
anything that's mythological
African lion.
Is a monster movie. Oh, yeah. Ghost in the Darkness?
Yeah.
Totally a creature
but like,
feature.
I'm sorry, so you're saying that like a Sasquatch movie isn't a creature feature, or it also is a creature feature?
I would call it a monster movie. I think it falls in the category of monster. Anything that's cryptozoological or mythological is a monster movie. Anything that takes science outside of the realm of possibility is a monster movie.
Right.
So even if you make it, even if you put it in the vein of reality, like The Relic, where you're like saying that it was this like genetic, it was this like viral bacterial hybrid thing.
Because it doesn't actually exist. It's a monster movie.
Exactly.
I gotcha.
Exactly. So, like, it has no basis in actual reality.
Wow.
As
that's
much
that
fun as I love those movies.
Science stuff we talked about a few episodes ago.
Oh, man, but I love that stuff, man.
But what
Relic
you're saying
is
that since
movies.
It can't exist, you're drawing a line that it could never possibly exist, even though you don't know if it could or not.
Ooh, man. See? That's so interesting, because if I was really following that logic, I would call Jurassic Park a monster movie, and I don't.
Yeah. Okay, we could have a whole episode about that, but we need to talk about one other thing right now, which is a movie coming out of the Tribeca Film Festival. There's a bunch of interesting movies coming out of there, but one in particular is called Something Else, and it's the synopsis as via Sickles is, after recently losing his girlfriend, a man must stop a monster that he's trying to break into his house at night.
Yes, and that was pretty much the extent of the synopsis from what it sounds like to me. I'm hoping that it kind of goes the route of the aptly named movie The Monster.
Yeah.
Which is this great that movie's got this great metaphor and juxtaposition between alcoholism and the very real monster that exists in the movie. And it goes back and forth between this daughter and mother dealing with the mother's alcoholism and her boyfriend's alcoholism, and then to their real scenario of being attacked by this monster that's in the woods.
Or like Absentia. Like, where you're kind of battling, you have a nice constant juxtaposition of the two things that are like reality and not reality, and how they are interplaying in the theme of the movie, right?
Yes. And I'm really hoping that that's the direction that something else goes in, where it's using the loss of this longtime girlfriend as a means of symbolism in the monster. So, like, the monster is actually taking place in the film. It's a real thing, mm-hmm. but it's giving you... But as a viewer, you're seeing the correlation between the loss of the girlfriend and this monster that's... he's struggling with. So it's in the vein of the Babadook, like that kind of a thing.
Yeah,
where
yeah.
We're actually experiencing the Babadook. The Babadook is an entity in the film that's real in the film, but for us as an audience, we're seeing, oh, this is a metaphor for her grief and loss of her husband mm-hmm. and the struggles that she's having with her child under the circumstances that she has, her parenting that's happening. That is what I love. I love that.
It could be like super disappointing, like Secret Window or Hide and Seek style movies.
Oh, it
where,
could totally
like,
be.
Where you're like, ah, dang it, it was just him, or oh man, like blah blah blah. But I'm like, this is one of those ones where you're like, as soon as they show some inkling of an actual monster, I think it'll probably be the end. But I do want to talk about one last thing before we run out of time, which is, and maybe you want to introduce this one because you were the one that brought it up, which was. Jordan Peele did an interview with Wall Street Journal, and we wanted to talk about something regarding that.
Yeah, I think it was like a 3.5-minute video. I'm sure you can catch it pretty much anywhere. I'm sure it's on YouTube by now, if it didn't start out there. But it's just him being asked a few questions about horror movies, like his favorite stuff, and one of the questions that he was asked, which I thought was kind of an interesting rabbit hole, was... what's his favorite trope in horror? And Jordan Peele said that his favorite trope was finding weapons around the house, like makeshift weapons, and improvising weapons with like common household objects or whatever you can find. And I thought that that was really interesting trope to pick, and it got me to think about what are my favorite moments in horror where that was the case? Like, what are my favorite makeshift weapons that the hero has decided to use to help fight, combat the antagonist or the villain or the monster or whatever? So we kind of created a little bit of homework to try to think of some of those. And I have a small list.
Me too.
Of some of my favorites.
So I think I know the ones that we're both going to have on there, because I know us well enough to know that we both like Dead Alive and we both like Evil Dead. And I think that the lawnmower weapon from Dead Alive is a pretty good weapon that's like improvised, right?
100%. Yep, that was on my list.
That was pretty cool. So if you haven't seen Dead Alive, he uses a lawnmower in the end to kill a bunch of like weird zombie people, and it's one of the scenes that has like some of the most gore in it. The new It scene that was kind of spoiled in that interview Jessica Chastain did. But the other one I had is Evil Dead Chainsaw Hand, which is kind of a cool improvised weapon.
Yeah, yeah, that's also like another classic that I think has stood the test of time. Mm-hmm.
Feast has some improvised weapons in it, but I haven't seen that movie in so long that I forgot what they were, but I know they basically make a bunch of crap out of the bar to like fight the things that are like hunting them outside.
Yeah, I don't really remember specifics on that either.
Another one.
That movie is such chaos.
Yeah, it is. But then the sequels you should never watch. You basically can just never watch them, so they don't exist. Another one was Jaws. Jaws actually has a pretty cool improvised weapon scene towards the end. When they use like the canister and throw it in his mouth and shoot it.
It's true.
That's a pretty good improvised weapon, right? Another one that I thought of that's not strictly horror, but I think it's pretty cool, is the, like, lighter gasoline scene from Die Hard 2, when he, like, lights the gasoline stream on fire and the plane blows up.
Oh my gosh, yes.
Aliens has a pretty cool improvised weapon where Ripley duct tapes two guns together and basically has a double gun, a flamethrower, and a machine gun with a grenade launcher on it.
Oh, shoot. I thought you were going to go with the first one, where she uses the that harpoon gun at the end.
Yeah, I forgot what happened.
She's using it against its purpose.
And I was like, oh, I don't want to pick it if I don't remember. And then I picked Feast. But the last one I have, though, is Freddy's glove, because technically Freddy's glove is something he built from stuff around his, like, you know, shack or whatever. And it's always kind of one of those weapons. It's not only, like, an improvised weapon, but it's kind of iconic.
Yes, no, that's true. A few that I had were, well, I had the lawnmower scene from Dead Alive. I have not seen this movie, but when I was researching this topic, I did find that there was a movie where a person was killed with an umbrella in Silent Night, Deadly Night 2.
I imagine that's a Christmas
doesn't
movie.
Sound like... I'm sure it is one of those. And I'm sure it's complete garbage. I'll probably never watch it, but that sounded pretty funny. I put the records from Shaun of the Dead at the beginning when they're throwing the records at the zombies. I thought that was hilarious, even though it was mostly ineffective. The microwave from Gremlins.
Yeah.
As well as Last House on the Left.
Ooh, yeah, that's a good point, too. Oh, Last House on the Left has, like, so many improvised weapon scenes, like traps. It's kind of like Home Alone meets, like a horror film, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. That and Spit in Your Grave is the other one I'm thinking of that they do that. They do a lot of like improvised stuff in that movie.
Yeah. Another one was the beer bottle from Idle Hands.
I knew Seth you were going to put Idle Hands thing on here.
Oh man, Idle Hands has so many great scenes, but that's the best one. Is that just using the bottle to stab his friend in the head?
Film for the rest of it with the bottle instead.
And it's got like a little bit of liquid in it, so it's just like jingling around in there, like moving around. It's hilarious. I love that movie. And then the banjo kills from Zombieland was the last one I had on there.
Interesting.
Woody Harrelson, you got a purty mouth. I love that. Good stuff.
So that's our little list of improvised weapons we like. I think that's all we have this week.
Yep, I think that's it.
Alright, well, thanks for listening. Like, comment, subscribe. Let us know what your favorite improvised weapons are in movies or in life, I guess. You know? Whatever gets you through the day. Thanks for listening.
Yeah, catch you next week.